its staff, or management. Thanks for listening and enjoy Radio Free Brooklyn. This is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How you doing today, huh? I don't know about you, but right out here in Bushwick, it's very sunny. It's a cloudless sky. I've got a great guest. I'm in a good mood. Do you know this is my 297th show? I've been doing this almost it'll be 7 years next month. Can you get over it? Well, anyway, thanks a lot for listening to I'm Dr. Lisa. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm a self-proclaimed psychotherapist. That's pretty much all you need to know. I want to remind you that you should check out Radio Free Brooklyn, okay? You go to radiofreebrooklyn.org. We really could use some help. This isn't the best time for nonprofit free radio. We've been doing this 7 years, and we want to keep going. We support a great community of people and listeners, and we do a lot of very positive things besides just entertainment, it's not just all fun. It's not all fun and games. So check us out and make a donation, okay? That's radiofreebrooklyn.org /donate. I also want to remind you that we are doing a live music show. That's right, on Friday, May 20th, 7:30 p.m. at Bar Frida. We are going to have some really great bands. Seventh Grade Girl Fight, Dirt Bikes, Barrette, Castle Black, all at Bar Frida. Tickets, $10. And then, you know what else? I want to tell you about a show that I am doing, okay? I'm having a show at an art gallery. The opening is May 13th, 6 to 8, and it's called But What Do You Think of My Work? And it's going to feature a sex doll who is living the life of an art student, making a living as a exotic dancer, stripper, sex worker, call it whatever you want. And all her work in her studio that she's making, it's an open studio, is about how she feels about all those things. So, anyway, it's at the border, okay? 56 Bogart. That's there. I did a plug. Speaking of plugs, I want to do a plug for my guest. So I can't believe who I have on today. It is so, so amazing, so interesting, and so complex. This person is very, I'm going to try and describe them to you, okay? I'm going to try and describe them to you, but I want to also get you to understand why she's here. Okay, her name is Paris Campbell. She is a incredible comedian, writer, TikTok star. And the reason I invited her on the show today is because she has autism. And the way that I found this out is because I saw her do her set at a mic, and it was great. And she said that she was autistic in the set. And then afterwards, I asked her about it, and she said, yeah, that she was. And I said, well, it's really hard to tell. And she said, well, I'm good at masking. And then I realized how little I knew about autism. And I'm like, I really want to find out more. And I want to, we got to learn about this shit, folks. We got all the stereotypes. We don't really know anything. So she's right here, and we're going to get into that. And I want to tell you, so we're going to focus on her autism. Because I honestly don't think, like, I still can't quite figure out. She's been here in the studio for more than 15 minutes, and I still have no idea why she's autistic. But I just want to tell you my impression of her before we get going. First of all, she's really smart, very quick-witted, like really good at like the TikTok thing. Like really, she could be like she could be doing this. She could be a newscaster or something like that. You know, she can like, she sounds intelligent, and very quick. She's also like ridiculously beautiful. Okay. And she has ADHD. She has autism. She's a single mom. And this is what she says about herself on her Instagram. She's a typical neurodivergent, bigender, bisexual, single mother living above a bar in Brooklyn. Okay, so now you know pretty much what I know about her. So let's see what we can. Oh, also, I just want to like, don't miss this. She is going to be doing this incredible show on Saturday, May 14th at the Broadway Comedy Club. Okay, I'll be posting about that and stuff like that, but it's 5:00. You should go check it out. I posted it on today on my Facebook. Blah, 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 blah. Hi, Paris.
Hi.
So there you have it. That makes sense. Is there anything that tell us a little bit about your daughter. She's a year and a half. Tell us about her.
Yeah, she's a year and a half old. Her name is Wynn, W-Y-N-N. And oh man, she's amazing. She's my world. I love her. She's just now started to walk independently as of this past week. So I mean, barely, but she's trying.
Yeah.
And you know, she's saying all these words, growing up so quick.
Oh it's man. Been awesome. And so the dad is was your. Tell us about the general situation so we get an idea.
Yeah, for sure. So I was with my previous partner for 5 years. We decided to have a baby about 2 years ago, and then I got pregnant right at the beginning of the pandemic. So I had a pandemic pregnancy, which was really difficult. But so blessed to have her. He and I are no longer together. We don't live together. But we see each other almost every single day because we have a child together. So we very much co-parent. We're in each other's lives consistently and, you know, happily so. So that she has a good support system.
And sounds like a really, really good situation.
We try. I mean, you know, nothing's easy, right? You know, it has its moments. And still, you know, she's so young and the situation is definitely new and different from what we originally anticipated. So, you know, we work with what we have, I think.
And but she really knows who both of her parents are.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And she is really loved.
Very much. She has so many people in her life who just love her and are there for her. And you know, my current partner, my boyfriend, is also very much a part of her life. And so she just has so many people who love her.
There you go. That's a happy kid. That makes me happy just thinking about what a happy childhood might have been like for some child somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Some abstract child that I haven't met. But so anyway, so this is you are definitely somebody who doesn't shy away from life.
I try not to.
Yeah. So we want to talk about autism. Oh, and also I wanted to mention, I forgot this, coincidentally, April is autism awareness month, and we were talking about that a little bit. We shouldn't be talking about autism. Okay, I'm just gonna try and cut to the chase. Here's what people, from what I read, and I asked Paris and she agreed with me, what people don't understand about autism, and I didn't read this until I met Paris and did a little research on my own, is that people with autism as individual as individuals. So when you think we get all these messages from the media and it's all bullshit. Okay. So it's like, I'm a Jew. Okay. Am I like other Jews? Not really. Cause we're all so individual. All right. You know, like we both know what Judaism is. We all know we're all aware of it, but like the way that I'm Jewish is nothing to do with the way somebody else is Jewish, okay? And we are all real individuals, and that's something that I hope that we're going to be learning about from Paris today, I hope, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to spread that message of just individuality, and because the stereotypes are so harmful. When you see an autistic person in, you know, mainstream media, it's usually someone who fits the, you know, the stereotype that was kind of in the DSM in the 90s, which was kind of for, you know, a young adolescent boy who's very rambunctious, perhaps nonverbal, you know, struggles very much with all social aspects and, you know, in some regards, maybe can't live a successful life or, you know, be on their own or something like that. And the reality is there are many people who are like that, but there are also many people who are not, and also many people who might not know that they're on the spectrum, or, you know, just all of us are so completely different.
So what would you say about how many do like a few, most, what's your estimation about like how many autistic people really can't live on their own? I mean, that's the,
oh, I have no idea, to be honest. I don't even want to pretend like I have an idea. But as far as
but that's the stereotype.
Definitely the stereotype. Just across the board, the stereotype is, you know, if you are autistic, that it's unlikely that you, you know, can be independent or, you know, appear to be
functional.
Yeah, or quote unquote normal or whatever you want to call it.
Right. But that is probably, that's what we think of, and that's just not it. So I should know that. I will look that up. I'll write that in, okay? When I post this episode, I will find that out, and I'm getting back to you on that fact. So the thing is that when I met you, obviously, the only way I knew you were, you know, I was surprised by, I mean, your set was great, and I was surprised by that. I was like, what? But then when I started talking to you, you said that you're good at masking. And so I'd never heard that term and I want to understand it. Can you explain it to us?
Yeah. So masking is a term that's used in the autistic community to explain kind of what we do when we present in public, or like kind of what we're taught to do, what society teaches us to do. So masking is just an autistic person doing their best to try to appear neurotypical. So what that can look like is sometimes if you're an autistic person, you might do things like stim. There's so many different ways of stimming. There's verbal stims, oral.
What is that?
Stimming is self-stimulation, like self-soothing movements. Mm-hmm. So for me, like I fidget a lot with my fingers, or sometimes I might rock back and forth, or I might sway because it makes me feel comfortable. It makes me.
So is there an anxiety that you're soothing? What is the feeling that
No, not necessarily. It's because it can also be pleasant. So it's not necessarily like a coping mechanism. It can be a coping mechanism, but it can also just be my body reacting to the sensory sensations that are around me. So if I'm, it's kind of like when people are listening to music and they start to tap their foot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like just a natural response to life.
So are you just like noticing sensations that other people might not notice?
Maybe. I mean,
how would you know that? But
I'm definitely hyper aware of certain things, like certain sounds or certain sound frequencies, or like sometimes if something touches me a certain way, it makes me feel very strange, or I might need to like take a moment to myself after that. Or if I see something that just for some reason just bothers me, it might give me like a weird sensory kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that stimming can sometimes be a way of coping with those things, but it can also just kind of be a way of like enjoying things.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not like you're looking at somebody uncomfortable when they're doing that.
No, and that's also a huge stereotype and common misunderstanding that people have, especially for people who might be like nonverbal. Like if you see a nonverbal person, you know, maybe like, you know, moving their hands kind of erratically or something like that, it might look like they're troubled, but they might just kind of be like vibing, like they're fine.
Yeah. So have you dealt with people that are nonverbal? Have you dealt with, I had asked you and you said that you have some friends that are autistic,
Yeah, right? Mostly like other content creators who I follow who were like mutuals on TikTok.
But you probably wouldn't have any way of getting it. You probably like,
I don't see them.
Right. How would you? So also, which brings us to another point, which is that you weren't officially diagnosed until you were in your, well, you, we don't have to talk about it. She looks like she's 22 right now. I don't know, but you know, but you said you were in your 20s.
No, it's fine to say it. I was 26. Yeah, I was 26 when I got diagnosed.
Uh-huh, which can't be that long ago.
I am turning 30 this year. So,
oh, okay, see, yeah. Whatever. 30? Baby. When's your birthday? That's exciting.
December 23rd.
Oh, very exciting. Near Christmas. Excited. 30, wow. That's almost as, yeah. 30 reminds me of, yeah, I remember that. So anyway, barely. But, okay, so 3-4 years ago, you found out. And how did you find out?
So it was a process. So I first started getting, because I got diagnosed with ADHD when I was a child. So I already knew I had that. And I was just on the internet and I started seeing all of these targeted ads and like all of these recommended videos and pictures and content and stuff about autism. And I was wondering why I kept seeing this stuff. And it was almost like all this technology, like all these algorithms that, you know, are supposed to figure out what you like or what you're into and recommend things to you based on, you know, your preferences. Right. It was all kind of telling me, maybe you should go and get checked out or maybe you should get evaluated.
That's so creepy, really.
It was extremely creepy. It was very creepy, but it did bring a lot to light because I realized in that moment, like, yeah, I do need to see someone. So
really from, well, do you think that you were, there was somehow like there was the algorithm knows you better than you know yourself. Like, did it sort of figure out like that you were looking at things that autistic people look at? Do you have any theory how it got to you?
I don't know. I mean, I did watch some videos about ADHD. Like I was watching some like meditation things of like, you know, how to try to like boost your concentration through like meditating. Mm-hmm. And maybe it kind of picked up on that from that. And then once you start watching the videos, though, like once like one's recommended to you and it's like, oh, you might have this, and you watch the whole thing, then the algorithm's like, oh, she's into this. So I think at that point it was also me.
It was also me
like creating more of it, because it was like it was
so
like
weird.
It was like, oh, I saw this one video and I connected with everything. So now, like, you know, all it was showing me.
So do you think that your ADHD diagnosis sort of masked the actual, you know, reality that you had autism?
I think that in a way it was kind of, it definitely didn't mask it, because looking back at my childhood, I had so many autistic traits that should have been picked up on. But I think that giving me just the ADHD diagnosis, which is valid, like, I mean, I definitely do have ADHD.
And you have medication.
Yeah, I'm medicated for ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it was kind of almost a way of being like, okay, well, like, yeah, you know, we're just going to kind of like, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But like I had so many things when I was a little kid, especially like the meltdowns, the sensory issues, the social issues. Those things are not things that are symptoms of ADHD. Those are symptoms of autism spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm.
So when you started watching the videos, that's when you said, this is me.
Yeah, I was like, nothing has ever made more sense in my entire life.
Wow. So did you pursue an official diagnosis after that? Or
I started with therapy. I first started bringing it up with a therapist. Then
were you in therapy already?
No, at that time I was not.
So did you start therapy because of that?
Well, I'd done therapy at various points before. But then it was like, yeah, I think I'm going to start therapy again.
Mm-hmm.
So first it was a lot of talk therapy. Then it was meeting with a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was taking 3 different evaluation tests. So there's like one that's called the RADS, RADS. There's the AQ, which is the autism spectrum quotient, or I might be messing this up. And then there's one other one that I'm not even going to try to pronounce.
So they gave you a bunch of tests.
Yes. Yeah, so you take a bunch of tests, and then like on all of those tests, it was like you can score anywhere between like a 0 to 30. And it was like on one of them, it was like if you got above a 24, then you were like definitely on the spectrum. And my score was like 27.
Uh-huh.
And then like all of them, it was like pretty high.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, the last step is just, you know, you go to a diagnostician.
And then what happens? Like, do they go like, okay, you are crowned autistic or?
It basically, yeah. I mean, it's
but there's a relief in that.
There is. I mean, uh-huh. it's there's a relief, but there's also like this like brain breaking moment of like earlier when we were talking about masking, like a lot of people, when they find out that they're autistic, like once they get that diagnosis, it almost like hurts our ability to be able to mask like for a while. We go through this period that we call unmasking because you just suddenly have been told that all of these little things in your head that like your whole life you've been like, oh, these are my quirks or these are like my silly little things that I do. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden they all like have a reason. Like you know why you do them and then you're hyper aware of them and then you can't mm-hmm. stop doing them. So it's like it kind of throws you into like a bit of like whoa, my world just got turned upside down.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yes, yeah, so it makes you very just aware. So, but it changes your mindset about yourself and how you're in the world, right?
Yeah.
So how did you manage that? Did you tell people? What did you go through for how long did it? I mean, you like I said, I haven't spent that much time. You seem perfectly fine to me. You seem like you're getting through life great to me. But so how did it affect you, though?
The very first thing that I did was probably one of the most like autistic things I could have done. And I made a 34 slide PowerPoint presentation to show to my family to tell them about it.
Wow. That's something. We should have had you bring that in here. I want to see that. What was that like? And who do you mean by your family?
Well, stuff? I sent it to my mother and my stepfather. And I made that. And because the one thing was because I know when people look at me, I know they go, oh, there's no way she's autistic. Or like, you know, or they look at me and they're like, oh, she's, you know, she does great. You know, she
well,
does.
Well, in all fairness, you are very beautiful. And I think that's just how society, you know, people, like if you're that beautiful, you can't also be autistic or something.
Yeah, and that's just the way that people,
bullshit, but
yeah, it's definitely not true, but that's definitely something right. that people believe or,
so
you know, just,
they don't want to, they, that's hard. It's society, once again, stereotypes in society, that's not helping us, folks.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
So I made that, and it was mostly just a kind of like, my biggest fear was that people weren't going to believe me, was that people were going to go, oh, no, you're not, or like, that's wrong, or like, because mm-hmm. I felt like I had just finally learned this huge thing that meant so much to me. It was like, whoa, like, everything makes sense. So I wanted people to understand me, especially the people who were, you know, most important to me. So like my family, my close friends. Mm-hmm. So I made this PowerPoint and I did like it wasn't during the pandemic. It was before, but I did like a little video voiceover thing.
Wow.
And I sent it to my mother and then I sent it to a couple of my close friends who I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I made them watch it. And I was like, just watch this.
Wow.
And it was just me explaining, you know, why this made sense and like the process that I went through to get diagnosed and also just like facts about autism and like, you know.
You know what's really interesting about how you handled that? And I kind of love how you handled it because it's so you took it all into your own hands and you managed it for them. And I wonder if you somehow feel like you have to manage, like people don't know how to relate to you and you have to make it easy for them.
Oh, yeah. My whole life, that's been a thing is I mean, unfortunately, one of my biggest things is I am hyper aware of people's perception of me. And that's something that goes into being autistic is because you have to kind of force this, you know, I'm trying to act normal type of thing. You're constantly wondering, like, am, or at least I'm constantly wondering, am I acting normal? Am I breathing right? Am I standing right? Am I sitting up straight enough? Or am I, you know, did I just do a weird thing with my hand?
There's a lot of self-monitoring.
Exactly.
But it's a very high level of, it's a lot. That's impressive that you're able to, that's a lot. So I wanted to find out how people reacted, your friends and your family, or the people you sent what impacted sending that video, what came out of that?
Well, my family was very, my family kind of was like, yeah, we kind of expected, or we kind of suspected this. So they were very understanding. It was kind of like a light bulb moment for everyone. Mm-hmm. There was nobody in my life who came back to me and was like, no, I don't believe you. Everybody who knew me was like, this makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel any anger? Do you think that you felt that your parents or whoever, you know, that your mother, I guess, I don't know, I'm assuming your stepfather wasn't around when you were a little kid or something,
yeah.
But did you feel like they should have been more aware or more sensitive? Like, did you feel any anger that people didn't know?
I felt anger that people misinterpreted my behaviors as negative things that they needed to correct rather than just things that they needed mm-hmm. to like embrace about mm-hmm. me.
Like what kind of things?
Like my stimming, for example. Like when I was a kid, I did this like cough hacky thing for a while that like I don't do anymore. But I guess it was annoying, which I understand. But like, you know, people around me like didn't need to be rude about it. They could have just like, you know,
people would be like, shut up. Or
yeah. Or like, why are you doing that? Or like, you know, just like, just accept it. Like I'm doing it.
Right.
So
you don't feel like you have control over it.
No.
It's involuntary.
Yeah. So little things like that, like, maybe people could have done differently, but on like an overall, like I personally, and this is going to be different for every person who has an autism diagnosis. So like, this is just me. I personally feel very grateful that I was not diagnosed as a child, because the only support that would have been available to me is things like ABA therapy, which is, I'm not very well educated on this because I know that it's kind of looked at as conditioning in a sense, like mm-hmm. which, you know, can have some like negative repercussions for a child. So I'm very happy that I didn't go through a lot of the standardized therapies that were available in the 90s for autistic children.
And to be labeled that.
Yeah.
Because.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, in a way.
Well, look at all the stereotypes we're trying to dispel and ones that I have, you know, and I'm curious. And the thing is that if you're diagnosed as a child with autism, people are going to make up all sorts of shit about you that probably is not true.
Yeah.
Can you explain, like, so autism stereotypically is also seen as a superpower, right? We see like...
Yeah, and that's also a very harmful stereotype.
We see that Temple Grandin, you know, mm-hmm. movie. You saw that or are aware of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Where she's like this weird genius that knows how cows want to be treated or something like that. Like, can you explain, like, I mean, you, to me, seem to have sort of a superpower in that you have all these... Well, I don't want to say deficits. That's another stereotype. But you have, you're managing a lot. Let's put it that way. You've got a lot to deal with, but you're able to function. So, like I said, I don't pretend to know you that well, but, you know, you certainly function well in a social environment. I know that for sure. I've seen that. So what I'm saying is that seems like a superpower. Like, can you speak to whether there's any kind of extra advantage or intelligence? Can you speak to that?
I think that everything is kind of a spectrum. So I might be really good at some things and might be even better at some things than people who are really good at some things than others. But mm-hmm. I bet you I am extra, extra bad at a bunch of really mundane things that come really easy for other people,
like,
you know?
What? Like what?
Like today, I'm doing, you know, fine. Like I got up out of bed. I
got here perfectly on time.
I got here on time, everything. But like, last week, like I left a thing early because I just didn't like the fact that I couldn't decide if I was standing straight enough on a stool. So like, you know, things do affect me sometimes to the point where I can't like get out of bed or like get moving or like.
But is that more of an emotional battle?
It might be an emotional battle, mm-hmm. but it becomes a physical limitation mm-hmm. because yeah. I become physically paralyzed. Like my biggest thing is sometimes I just become physically paralyzed and like cannot move and like won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I wanted to understand as well. I want to try to understand that because like, you know, who is the person who you are compared to the person that is making it all work out in the world? Like who, like, and do, like, do, when you're, do, when you're with somebody, does your partner know that person? Does your family know? Is there a very different person that the people who you're really close to, do they know that person?
There's definitely a very different person who, when I'm alone, when I'm not filming a TikTok video, mm-hmm. when I'm like, you know, just by myself in my apartment with maybe a couple of close other people, there's definitely mannerisms that might come out that don't come out around like, you know, when I'm on stage or when I'm around a big group of people. But for the most part, I try to not hide who I am or let whatever happens, whether I'm masking or not, it's unintentional. I never like make an effort to like no matter anymore, at least. When I was younger, I used to be like, oh my God, why am I doing this thing? Or like, Paris, you're not supposed to be rocking back and forth in this art class or like, you know, things like that. But now as an adult, I just do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are either going to be weirded out by that or, you know, most people don't give a shit, especially here in New York City. It's like,
yeah, right.
You know, like most
people are like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Or maybe
doing that weird thing.
Yeah.
Again.
People might think I'm like on drugs or something and that's fine. But yeah, now I try to not let like the situation dictate my behavior because then I get burned out. Like if I focus too much on trying to appease everybody around me, which I can't help but do to a certain degree.
Yeah, we all do to some degree. I hope.
Yeah. But I will eventually reach a point of complete exhaustion and just like shut down. So I try to keep that from happening by just like letting it be.
How about as a parent? Do you think like does it have any impact at all on being a parent? I mean, your daughter wouldn't have any idea about what's normal or not. I mean, is it's probably really freeing to be around her, but do you ever like, you know, like you were saying, you can't get out of bed. Do you worry about that or is it?
I definitely worry about it, but I have found that, and I'm someone who I still do what I need to do to survive you know, I would never put another person in danger or in harm's way or like it's always important to me to make sure that everybody who's in my space is, you know, taken care of and healthy and happy.
Right. So you're very, very, very functional.
Yeah.
Functional.
So, I mean, there's definitely been times though where I've just been having an especially difficult time, and then luckily I have a support system. You know, I have her father, or you know, I have my partner, I have some close friends of mine who, if I wound up in a situation like that where, you know, I could not do it or I couldn't pull myself together, I would have people who would be able to step in. But if they weren't able to, I still have, you know, enough of like a care for the people around me to make sure that I'm, you know.
So you have the ability. This is what you're saying. This is
at least I'd say 99% of the time.
And you're able to get somebody else.
And I can feel that stuff coming too. It's like there's never been a time in my life where I've just like broken and been like, oh, I just suddenly cannot life. Like it's always been a slow process of like I feel myself breaking.
So can you just explain to us like what you mean, like when you feel like you're not like what's just so we know, like what's something where you feel like you can't get out of bed or you have to leave? Like, what happens there? Like, what, you're not, are you becoming, is it a physical thing? Is it like, self-awareness, like, I can't be doing this anymore? Or like, what's going on when it gets really bad?
When if I'm like having a full blown, like, just like meltdown, I'm usually, it's just, if I don't know how to describe it. You're just kind of, I'm just kind of in myself, and I'm usually very emotional, or, you know, crying or something like that. Probably, usually like in my bed or somewhere that's comfortable. And I just kind of like curl up usually and just,
You want to be alone?
Not necessarily, but depending on the severity, like, I usually don't want people touching me.
Stimulation?
Yeah, like, like, I become very sensitive to sound, to touch, to, especially, like, certain sounds that are particularly bothersome, like a crinkling paper, or, like, someone, like, a dog barking, or a baby crying, or, you know, someone eating, things like that. Like, and then... Yeah, I just kind of, I guess I kind of dissociate in a way. Or I just kind of obsessively think the same things in my head over and over again and feel like I can't speak, can't, you know, get out
feel
of it.
Feel overwhelmed.
Exactly. And then what I do is I have this thing set up with my headphones where I'll do like a little command on my phone where I'll just be like, I need to calm down. And then my headphones will start playing white noise music. And then I'll just kind of stay there and, you know, listen to that sound and kind of like hug myself until I, you know, regulate again.
Impressive. Your coping, your self-regulating, self-coping skills are really, really impressive. Guys, look, you think you've got a lot to try to act normal out there? Look at this. This is my hero right here. I think it would be interesting to hear sort of a little bit about your childhood and like how what it was like and how it, you know, how your parents missed, you know, they might have missed something about you. Do you feel, I want to ask you this first. So do you feel like, that your condition or your situation isn't like anybody else's around you? Like, do you ever feel like, oh, they don't understand me, or like I'm feeling like I need to, you know, just be here and not hear this white noise and no one gets what I'm going through? Or, I mean,
yeah, definitely. I definitely feel like that sometimes.
I feel like that when I get depressed.
Yeah.
But do you think it's different? Is it a different thing?
I feel like people can't understand, like, people sometimes tell me that I come off as cold or insensitive, or not like in a typical everyday conversation, but if we start talking about serious matters, like death or, you know, something like that, people might say, oh, you're cold, you're insensitive. I think that it's difficult for me to attach emotional significance to the same things that people attach emotional significance to.
Interesting.
So that can be something that's difficult for me to understand. Like, sometimes when people are upset about a certain thing, like an everyday thing, like if someone's complaining about their job, or if someone is, you know, going through something, I might not understand why that upsets that person. So I can't relate to their emotional state. So their emotional state might either make me uncomfortable, or it might just be confusing to me. So I might be inappropriate by asking you questions about your emotional state that you don't want to answer right now because you're upset. Or I might be uncomfortable around you because of your emotional state, so I might withdraw from you or criticize you.
Because you don't know how to, you're just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So what do you think that is? Is that like a cognitive thing where you just don't feel it, or?
I think that I deal more with like my rationale brain a little bit more than like everything. I want everything to make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, then I kind of keep obsessing over it until I can make sense of it. So I think that can be difficult for people to relate to me sometimes, because they're like, why doesn't she just understand? And I'm just like, no, I would love to understand, but like, I don't know. It's
just that your brain doesn't work that way. I wonder if some of that got developed because of all the intellectual coping that you've had to do. You know, like, okay, I'm with the normal people. I have to act this way. And, you know, I want to hold on to this job or whatever. I always felt like I was trying to cope, trying to hold on to a job. I relate to it that way personally. But so let's talk a little bit about your childhood, because your family missed this. Did you feel like that you were, you know, I'll just say weirdo growing up?
Well, my family did definitely send me for the evaluation. I was evaluated so much as a kid, but the people who missed it were at the time the psychiatrists who I went to.
So you were sent for an autism evaluation?
I was sent for an everything evaluation. Oh, okay. I was acting out. My family described it as acting out. Around the age of 5, I started throwing extreme temper tantrums that we now know they were meltdowns. But when I was a little kid, it just kind of looked like I was angry or freaking out for no reason.
Do you remember how you felt or what was going on at all?
I only remember, I don't have very many like vivid like first person memories from when I was a little kid, but I do remember one time like repeatedly slamming and like opening and slamming my bedroom door like over and over and over again while like screaming at the top of my lungs. And I don't remember like what I was feeling, why I was doing it. Like, I think I just felt like that's what I needed to be doing in that moment. And I don't know why, but because of things like that, and I was so young that like I was really all over the place. Yeah, my family sent me I remember this like evaluation situation where I took so many tests, and then they like had all of these like different like electronic things. Like, I had to do this test where like I had to push these buttons, and like it was weird. But
Do you remember, like, did it make you feel how it made you feel as a child? Like, it could make you feel special, it could make you feel weird, it could make you be frustrating. Do you remember like how it affected you? Like, I'm getting all these extra tests. Did you have brothers and sisters? No, so you're an only child.
Yeah, no, I'm
so you didn't have
sorry.
Anybody to compare it to.
Yeah, no, I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I was just kind of like, oh, this is normal. Maybe it was like another doctor's appointment, or like it was like a
thing.
So you didn't have.
That's interesting. If you'd had brothers or sisters, they might have like.
Yeah, they might have been like, hey, you know, you're. Like, I didn't go to those tests. Yeah, I didn't have anyone. I also didn't have friends when I was a kid. So there was like no one around to be like, what you're going through is not normal.
So how did you not have any friends? What was the circumstances there? Was it because of your autism or your something else?
Well, kids did not like me, and I did not like them either. Mm-hmm. I did not act like a little kid. Mm-hmm. I didn't speak like a little kid. I spoke like a 30-year-old when I was like 11. So kids made fun of me. And I was also overweight when I was a little kid, like dramatically so. I was the biggest kid in my maybe not the biggest in like, you know, the whole school, but like definitely like my grade or my small class.
Right.
So I was bullied and picked on for that. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was bullied a lot as a kid. And also, I probably admittedly was a little bit weird. So it was hard to relate to me.
That makes me sad when you say I admittedly was a little weird. That sounds sad and self-judgmental. But
not in a bad way, but definitely different than the other kids.
Were you hostile? Were you weird or was it like, did you have negative behaviors that would have
Oh, I certainly
that
had negative.
Kids didn't want to be around you.
Yeah, I was. I mean, mostly I think as a response to the bullying, but I was also mean back to kids. I was never like physically aggressive with anyone, but I definitely, yeah, I was rude. I was standoffish. I was authoritative. I was, you know.
So you were confident, though.
Yes, I've always been confident.
That's really cool. You didn't question your behavior.
No.
That's
But
awesome.
I probably should. Now looking back as an adult, like, I didn't understand things when I was a kid. I mean, you know, what kid does. But I think that I understood things socially a little bit less than kids my age did. So I didn't understand that it was, you know, rude to go up to someone and tell them exactly what you think of them, whether they were like a child or an adult or, you know. So now I kind of, you know, I know how to be like more pleasant in a...
Or like, yeah, social norms.
Yeah.
You understand them. So how did your parents manage all this? Like, what was your situation like at home growing up?
Well, because I grew up with my grandparents, so they were much older. Like when I was born, my grandmother was, I think, about to turn 60. So,
wow.
You know, by the time I was going through like middle school, early high school, they were in their 70s. And so to them, it was like one very much kind of the knowledge of all of this was kind of out of their like that generation gap of just like, you know, even I mean, in the late 90s, early 2000s, we knew so much less about autism than we do now.
Yeah.
It was still very much a, you know, very stereotypical,
new
you know,
thing. And yeah. Mostly with boys.
Exactly. So they interpreted my behavior as negative behavior, which I think is kind of understandable given like the era they grew up in, like their knowledge of everything.
Did they punish you? Were you punished for your behavior or how did they manage it?
I wasn't punished. I mean, they definitely tried to set boundaries to the best of their ability, but also I was severely undermanaged, I think, as a child, just because I was unmanageable. I really kind of ran at my own speed and I did what I wanted to do no matter what anyone told me.
So they just gave up.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, but they kind of didn't have an option. Like, I kind of like, like, no matter how hard they would have tried to get me to do what they wanted me to do, I wasn't going to do it.
So did you just like, you would eat when you wanted to eat, you would do whatever you wanted to do?
Or, exactly.
And did you go places with them? Did they take you out for dinner? Like,
sometimes. Like I mean, sometimes we would do family stuff. But for the most part, I mean, I kept to myself. I was very interested in like being on the computer. Computers were like a huge thing to me when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, still are as an adult, but like I was really interested in like building computers. When I was in middle school, I was really interested in robotics. So I was very much like just into my own little world and they didn't really understand that. So to them, it was frustrating and it was troublesome because it was like, what's Paris doing with her eyes glued to a computer screen like 24 hours a day?
Right.
But, you know, I was going to do it.
Did you get good grades in school?
No.
And was that a problem?
To everyone else.
Oh, but you didn't feel bad about it.
No.
That's so awesome.
I don't know if that's awesome. I mean, it's awesome now. I made it, right? Or I survived.
No, but it's really, I don't know. I mean, I don't, I just counter transference. Personally, confidence is my hot button issue. So I just can't even relate to that. But I still think that not being taken down or thinking less of yourself because of the behavior that you were exhibiting is impressive and a real strength.
I mean, there's definitely moments where I felt, I don't think I ever looked down on myself, but I think that I felt bad about myself as a result of how I thought others looked at me. And I still do all the time. But if I look at myself just objectively and I go, this is Paris, this is how she is, I don't feel bad about that. But I do often feel bad about how other people look at Paris, that person.
You think they're going to be critical?
Exactly, yeah.
Or they don't get it. I think
I worry a lot about what people are going to think.
But did you feel confident with your grandparents?
I didn't feel uncomfortable with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I like
did
felt
you feel loved?
Yeah, I definitely felt loved. I definitely knew they loved me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm curious about what happened in adolescence. What happened when you got a little older and, you know, boys, girls, sexuality, and what was high school like for you?
I got sent to boarding school when I was in seventh grade, so I was 12. And it was an all-girls boarding school. I very quickly realized that I was attracted to girls.
Mm-hmm.
So I identify now as like queer, bisexual, I guess, if I want to put like a concrete label on it. But it's really fluid. I mean, I don't really know.
And you're with a man now.
I'm with a man now, but yeah, I've been with women. I've been with non-binary people. I mean, I've been with all sorts of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I started figuring that out when I was around 12, 13. And then I went through a lot of trouble when I was a teenager. Like I got in trouble a lot at school. I got I got taken in the middle of the night to a wilderness program.
Oh man, they put you in one of those wilderness programs?
I was in three different TTI programs.
Wow.
Yeah, I was in a wilderness program, and then I went to a residential treatment center in Utah, and then I went to a lockdown facility in Tennessee.
So was there drugs or alcohol or anything like that involved?
Nothing that was like, I didn't have any addictions. Like, I mean, I'd smoked pot a couple times.
Yeah, right, whatever.
I'd maybe like tried drinking like a handle of like Mad Dog 2020 or something in like a 7-Eleven parking lot.
No, but what was the behavior that they were concerned about?
Truancy, like really bad grades, not going to class. I was also severely depressed. My first girlfriend around that age, when I think I was around 14 when it happened, she died in a car accident. So that made me extremely depressed. And she was a daughter of one of the teachers of my school. And it was a heartbreaking thing. And so it was, you know, everyone knew this girl, and she was like, you know, one of the pride and joy students of the school. And then she died tragically. So that really affected me when I was a kid.
No kidding.
And there was just a lot of, also, I think just like, I definitely was not as functional as a child or as a young adult. I just didn't yet understand how to like regulate my feelings and how to control my impulses and force myself to live a life.
So you weren't coloring in the lines. So you'd be like maybe reacting inappropriately, like angry or?
Yeah, I was very angry.
Was it more aggressive behavior that was getting you into trouble?
Yeah, I mean, never physically aggressive, but I was very verbally aggressive, and I was always, I was just always causing a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not necessarily in like a nonsensical way, but I was like highly opinionated, and I was very like, I was very just kind of crass, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a clue that you were doing that? Did you know, did you like feel frustrated by people and you were acting out, or do you have any ideas about that? Or
I think I definitely felt frustrated. I felt trapped and kind of constrained in this like high school, middle school experience that like I couldn't get out of.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Which, like, I don't know. I feel like everyone kind of feels like that to a degree.
So you were expressing everybody's feelings for them.
Yeah. I was just like, I don't want to be here. Like, I don't want to be like 16 in the mountains in Pennsylvania right now. Like,
was that helpful, by the way? I've always been curious. I always thought those were like, there's something cool about those outdoors wilderness.
No, God, no, they're so, I can't say that all outdoor, you know, wilderness programs
like
are bad,
you?
But I can say that the therapeutic ones are usually terrible.
Really? Why? Are you deprived? Are you like, Survivor?
It's like, yeah, it's literally child abuse. I mean, imagine getting dropped off in the middle of the woods, like having no hiking experience whatsoever, and you're like 14 years old and you weigh like 130 pounds soaking wet, and you're like, and they're like, all right, you're gonna hike 6 miles a day for the next 30 days, you're gonna have no running water, no electricity, you're not going to be allowed to socialize with people, and you have to like look at the ground at all times. Like, God,
that must have been awful.
It was awful.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I did that for like 3 months and then got shuffled to like another therapeutic place, another therapeutic place.
So, wow, it sounds like people cared, but they were really at a loss.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there were a bunch of people around me who wanted to try to do the right thing for me. And that I acknowledge and that I've always appreciated. But the execution was poor.
So we only have 6 minutes left. So we got to find out, like, how you turned into such a highly... I mean, I don't... You know, the little bit of time we've spent together, I don't see that person, the aggressive person you're describing. So I'm guessing that you kind of figured that all out. So I want to understand how that happened or what happened there.
I think that a lot of it was just kind of growing up and becoming more and more comfortable within myself and realizing that I didn't need to make such a statement.
Uh-huh.
That like I could just be myself and that's okay. So that was the number one thing. The other part of it was extreme cognitive behavioral therapy.
Ah,
so for many years.
Oh, I see.
So just a lot of, you know, sitting down and talking about, okay, when you feel this way, it probably stems from this thing. And, you know, understanding the way that I was feeling and why I feel the way that I feel about things, like identifying the root emotion of whatever I'm feeling helps me not resort to an immediate place of anger.
Right. Cognitive behavioral therapy. That's great. I'm really, you know, I haven't, you know, done it really, but it seems like such an underused tool in the psychotherapy toolbox, because everybody's always trying to like figure out like, how did I get this way? What can I do about it? How do I change my behavior or whatever? And it's like basically saying you don't have to change any, you know, just like figure out, like you don't have to understand everything. You have a quirk. Figure out how to make it work for you, right?
Exactly.
How to cope with it, how to manage it.
Or like learn how to identify the feelings underneath the feelings so that you don't jump to your place of, you know, oh, I'm anxious, or oh, I'm going to be really mad at you, or, you know, just understand why you're feeling the way that you do, and then you can react to it in a nice, normal, calm way.
Yeah. Amazing. Wow. 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 That is pretty awesome. I mean, I was just thinking about like the courage it takes to have a child, because there's a lot of logistics.
Yeah.
And to have the confidence, or, you know, to me, like that seems like overwhelming, the idea of having that kind of responsibility. But obviously you are way, way capable of it. And so I think that, you know, it seems like a lot of the lessons you've learned have really helped you thrive, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think that definitely all of the experiences just up to this point have definitely shaped me, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. But like, do you feel like sometimes you get in a pressure situation, you're like, I can handle this because I know how to, I've done this before, I have this experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely learned from like my mistakes, my hardships, and times that I have not been able to manage my emotions. And maybe if I figure out something that worked that last time, I can apply it to the present and try to.
But also, like, I could imagine you like on a shoot, like on a film shoot, and everybody's like, "Oh my God, you know, this, what, we didn't get this thing," and then everybody's running around going nuts, and you're like,
"I'm probably just sitting there,"
and you're like, "Okay, work it out."
Yeah, like we'll
good
figure
in emergencies.
It out.
Emergencies.
I'm definitely, I'm good in an emergency. I do tend to like, I go immediately into like, how do I fix this place without freaking out?
Yeah. That's great. And great. That's the difference. That's why that's why you're making a great parent, and why I can't do it. Cause I would just be oh no, the kid. Oh my God. Look, there's like a bruise on her face. I don't know. They're going to come and arrest me. So we have 1 minute left, and I just want to remind, thank you so much. This has been like so great, and I have so much to process here, and I'm excited about doing that.
This has been so fun. Thank you.
But I do want you to make sure that you check Paris Campbell out at Paris Campbell on TikTok. On TikTok, it's stop at Paris. On Instagram, it's Paris Campbell. Come to her show on Saturday, May 14th at the Broadway Comedy Club. Make sure you check out radiofreebrooklyn.org. You know, we have over 70 shows here. A lot of them are music shows. We've got politics, comedy. We have cooking shows now. So I really think you should check them out. I'm at Dr. Lisa Levy, SP. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. So come by. Come by and hang out, all right? All right, we'll be looking for you. Stick around.